Good morning, Tucson. Happy Thursday to you. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios. With me, your host, Zach Yenser. You're listening to Tipping Point for the next hour. Every day, 9 to 10 in the morning, Monday through Friday, we do in-depth news, talk, and conversation about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Another full show for you today. I feel like I say that every day because it's the truth. Full shows these days, lots to talk about. We're going to, at 9:15, hear from Ramon Valadez. He's the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Had him on a couple weeks ago last to do an update from the board, and a lot has happened in those 2 weeks. We're going to catch up on all of it, debrief where the county is now, talk about some of the community response to the temporary measures that were passed, what amounted to temporary health code regulations on restaurants and retail as they open from COVID-19, if they choose to open, based on the governor's order from a couple of weeks ago. So we'll talk about that. And then Fernando Gonzalez, I'm looking forward to this interview. It's his first time on the show. He is a Republican running for Richard Elias's old seat. I don't know how you say that now. He passed suddenly. A shocking loss, I think, for anyone on either side of the aisle. Just a longtime public figure passed suddenly a couple of months ago. Betty Villegas is now holding Richard Elias' seat in District 5 until November, but is not running for election. And so on the Republican side, Fernando Gonzalez, who did run about 8 years ago for the seat, is running again. So we'll have him on the air the full last half hour, and I'm excited about that. So that's our show today. And in preparation for that show, I got to thinking about what I am most wanting to hear from all candidates for all seats that we have on this show, and that is a big, bold vision for the region, a big, bold vision for the region. And by the way, I don't think that either party is doing that at the moment, right? So I'm not getting into anything partisan when I say what I'm going to say next. But some off-the-cuff remark Vic Williams made to me before he got on the air and my program. He's a Republican running in Allie Miller's district, District 1. He said, you know, I don't feel like we've had, you know, a comprehensive vision for this region expressed for a long time. You know, I think in his view in the district, but I mean, I think across the board, I don't want to put words in his mouth. I'm just saying he got me thinking that when you hear candidates, I think, you know, in terms of whether it was, you know, council, whether it was county, whether whatever it is, I don't know if you hear a big, bold, I'm in love with this region vision for the region. And that's not to say that there's not good people running or smart people running or visionary people running. Like, don't get me wrong. I think the campaigning, I think the being in the seat, it becomes very nuts and bolts very quickly. And I think that there is a potential for our county. There's a potential for our city. There's a potential for Southern Arizona to do some really big things. But I don't ever hear a big vision, right? And when I talk about a big vision, let me clarify that. And again, this is where my mind is going as I'm thinking about as we restart our candidate interviews. You know, what would it be like to hear, you know, a candidate say, Tucson is going to be the hub of XYZ in the Southwest. I believe that Tucson is an incredible piece of the Sun Corridor, and here's how we're going to achieve our potential. Or I believe that Tucson or the county is at a tipping point moment. Yes, I know that is a term very near and dear to me for obvious reasons, but we're at a tipping point. Let's embrace this future. Or what would it be like to hear a candidate, you know, say, look, Tucson's history in many regards is we get to these moments of great potential. We get to these tipping point moments. And whether we know we say it or not, we often say no thank you, right? We are often afraid to step into our best possible future. And I think back to, I think to cities like Pittsburgh or to Detroit or to Cincinnati or to Columbus. And you look at these cities that have had booms and busts and regional prominence, and then maybe they waned and now they're coming back up. You know, you look at Tucson's story. What is Tucson's story? What is Southern Arizona's story? Have we had those periods of long-term boom and long-term? We've had long-term busts for sure. I mean, we just pulled out of the Great Recession, I would say, you know, maybe a year ago, generously. But we don't have that similar story. What I think we do have a story of is we get to these places where our best possible future is within arm's length, and we never quite seem to grasp it and take it on. And so as I restart the candidate interviews again, you know, and with Fernando Gonzalez in District 5 today running as a Republican, it just got me thinking what I personally am hoping to hear from candidates moving forward is, what is the big idea? What is the big idea? You know, we've got some candidates who are running as kind of budget hawks, which is good. We've got some candidates running that have kind of some pet issues, also not a bad thing necessarily. But what is that big, expansive, bold vision for either the city or the region look like? That's what I want to start hearing.
Can I ask you a question, Zach?
Sure.
Can you think back during various times when Tucson was doing well, and then we probably need to define what we mean by doing well. What was the economy like? What kind of population we had? What diversity of the population was? If we could look back at those times when, I don't know, people were happy, people were doing well, average incomes were pretty nice, local governments were not constantly crying that they didn't have enough money, that they seemed to be doing well with the money that they were getting as far as taxes, etc. If we could look back at those times, could we also see what was going on around Tucson, in Tucson, that might have been contributing factors?
Tom, it's a great question, and it's something that I don't have the answer to, but I'm happy to say I've started asking around. I've put this out on social media. I've put this out and go, you know, what, and this is a question that's very subjective. What was the golden age of Tucson, right? And I don't disagree. We might be on the cusp of one, right? So that's not saying it's a far off time, but what was the last golden age of Tucson?
And I mean, there were times when tourism was big.
Right, I get
there
were, right.
there was time when Hollywood was making movies here and bringing a lot of money into the economy.
Right.
We now seem to be shifting more towards government and technology, and tourism's still there. But you know, where are the balance? How are the balance scales balancing out?
Right. Tom, I mean, these are the, and not in a negative way, these are the questions that I'm asking and learning about and gathering feedback on, because I want to figure out what is that and what is the vision for, you know, for that, for that golden age. And I think before we go to break here, the thing that's kind of jingling around in my head is that I think you could look back like on other cities that have had booms and busts. I think you can make the case that during their boom times, there was widespread prosperity, right? There was the wealth, the prosperity was equally, you know, either distributed or, and I don't mean distributed in terms of government. I just mean like you look at steel factories, manufacturing, the Rust Belt, a lot of those cities that had to reinvent themselves to survive. But you look at what was happening there, and you had this feeling that that at least opportunity was widespread. I am challenged to find a time in Tucson's history where prosperity was shared. Where, yeah, I think there was periods of boom for sure, but I think there's a lot of argument to be made that those booms did not come with widespread prosperity. And so I think rather than like nickel and dime the issues as candidates, I want to hear candidates come out and talk about, how do we reach that new golden age? How do we create that widespread prosperity? What does the best possible future for the region look like, and how do we get there? Personally, this is just me personally, That's what I want to be hearing. And so this is my stream of consciousness, Tom, as we get ready for a candid interview, bottom of the hour. But I want to go to a quick break because we have Ramon Valadez on the line, Pima County Board of Supervisors Chair, to debrief on the last couple weeks of what's been going on. We'll be right back.
Vantage West Credit Union proudly stands with the communities we serve during these unprecedented and trying times. It's in these moments where strong communities thrive by working together. We are proud to live in a place where we help each other, even in the midst of the most difficult of circumstances. We will emerge more connected and more prosperous than ever before. Vantage West has been here since 1955. We're here now, and we will get through this together. Vantage West Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Would you like a hand in shaping the future of transportation in Tucson? Well, the city is developing a plan called Move Tucson to identify and prioritize transportation projects over the next 20 years, and we want to hear from you. Head to movetucson.org to share your vision for how to improve Tucson transportation, no matter how you get around. How do you want Tucson to grow? Go to movetucson.org and let us know. Again, that's movetucson.org.
10:30, The Voice. News from inside the Beltway.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt on the next Hugh Hewitt Show. Has General Flynn's petition for a writ of mandamus been granted? Has the D.C. Circuit acted quickly to end the circus in Judge Sullivan's court? Listen in and we'll find out. I'll bring you the latest details and maybe I'll find out where the General Flynn Legal Defense Fund really is on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
Weekday mornings from 10 to noon on 10:30, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point. On the air with us now for the next few moments is the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Ramon Valadez. Again, someone I greatly appreciate for committing to consistently showing up on this program, and I think overall in the community as well, to talk through what's going on. Ramon, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. And I got on my soapbox on accident, and so I want to cut to the chase with you so we get through what we wanted to get through. But it's been an interesting 2 weeks. You were on 2 weeks ago. I want to start this way and get your perspective, Ramon Valadez. The county put together a survey of residents in the county of what they felt would be most comfortable for them as we reopen restaurants. It seems like to me, from the outside looking in, that the restaurants believe that there was going to be some kind of recommendations. But I've heard from fellow supervisors, I've heard from restaurants, we've heard from the AG, that all are kind of surprised that these turned into temporary, what some are calling health code regulations. There seems to be a lot of people surprised about what's going on, and I want to get your perspective on those 15 guidelines and what the county was hoping to do when it put those a little bit more harder in code on paper.
Right, and you'll notice that a lot of them actually are identical or even a little lax from the CDC recommendations that came out, I believe, earlier this week as well. So it's not out of bounds. Remember, these recommendations were vetted through a restaurant subcommittee of the Back to Business Task Force. So you can claim there can be an allegation clearly that it came out of nowhere, but the record doesn't really show that. We've put it out originally. It was reviewed by the restaurant committee. It was once again presented to the task force itself. And if you remember, part of the conversation we had 2 weeks ago was that, look, we're going to put these in place, assuming we can get the votes, and then what we're going to do is it's going to be a work in progress, because there is no intent here at putting anybody out of business. The intent here is simply to make sure that we are honoring our statutory, and let me make that clear, statutory. It's in state code that we are the responsible public health entity in our region. We have a, under the law, a responsibility for public health, and that's where this comes from.
And just to make sure everyone listening has caught up, what we're speaking about are, you know, the things like wellness measures for employees, minimum restaurant operation measures, you know, kind of guidelines around how many people and how many seats and how to, you know, do temperature checks and things like that. There are 15 to 17 of these. Ramon Valadez, I've been working all week to get all perspectives of this on. Have heard from some restaurants as well who said, you know, this seems to make sense on paper, but in practice, it's a little bit difficult. I have in front of me here paperwork showing kind of some adjustments that will be worked on, I believe, today from those hearings on Tuesday. Do you agree with that? And are you okay with that, that some of these maybe made sense on paper, but not in practice? And are you and the board willing to make adjustments?
Absolutely. As I said 2 weeks ago, we wanted to make sure that we got something on paper to give some level of guidance. But if you remember, even 2 weeks ago, I used the words, this is going to be a work in progress. So we heard from some of our restaurant operators, and we're making adjustments to it. I sent you a copy of the red line copy of,
yes,
of what we're looking at. So we are now going from 17 to 15. And if you notice, there's a good amount of adjustments, not only under restaurants, but under the other categories as well. Because once we started listening and seeing what was going on, we understood that we needed to adjust it. And that is absolutely the intent of the board today.
I want to make sure we get to this piece as well, Ramon, and that is that some state senators and representatives did take issue with these guidelines, citing them, in their opinion, as being above and beyond what the governor listed out. It sounds like the attorney general is at least willing to request your feedback on that charge. Where does the county go from here in responding to the AG?
Right, and let me clarify on this. This is an allegation on the part of the representatives from, I believe, LD 11.
Mm-hmm.
It is, it's a state law that was passed in 2016, and they refer to it by the Senate bill number, which is, I believe, 1487.
Yes.
Which says that, essentially, what it says is if a state legislator believes that a county, municipality, is not following guidance or laws set forth by the state, they can then make that allegation to the Attorney General, who then has the responsibility of investigating and resolving that within a period of 30 days. So they made said allegation. The Attorney General asked us to respond. We responded yesterday. Obviously, the document that you and I have in front of us right now wasn't in place yet. Obviously, we're considering this today at 2 at 1:30 West Congress, if anyone would like to show up. But obviously, he's got to look at whether or not he believes that there was a way above and beyond what the governor had intended. Obviously, the day before we even considered the original one, I actually sent it to the governor myself with a cover letter to let him know what we were doing. I didn't, nor have I received a response, but we wanted to make sure that he was aware of what we were doing. If you listen to what he kept saying in his press conferences, he really told people, look, don't expect the same kind of dining experience that we're accustomed to. If ever, that's not going to be for a long time. He also encouraged people, particularly vulnerable populations, to keep physically distancing, to not leave their home if they didn't really have to. So he himself is actually telling people, hey, be careful. The virus is still out there and it's still contagious.
Ramon Valadez is our guest on the air, chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. And I want to say again, sir, thank you for your commitment to talking this through with the people of Pima County. I just don't want that to go unnoticed, that a lot of people in your position would not take the time to discuss all of the issues. And as I've mentioned, we're trying to get all perspectives of this on the air. I want to get your thoughts on this. We've got about 3 or so minutes, but we heard from some of the restaurants at the hearing that kind of testified, if that's the right word, on Tuesday, that they said, wait a second, you know, Costco, Walmart, Target doesn't have to do these same things. The county says we want to put these in place to make sure that people feel confident to get in restaurants. Restaurateurs are saying, no, these things make people more afraid, that there's something out there that has to be, you know, fixed and guidelined around. There seems to be two competing views of both parties wanting to help, but disagreeing on how it works. What would you say to the restaurateurs who are bringing that point up?
Let me add a third perspective.
Okay, we can always do more.
The people of Pima County. When we put out the 17 conditions originally for that survey, within a period of about 3 or 4 days, we have almost 10,000 responses. Now, for those of us who have done survey, 10,000 in 3 to 4 days is huge.
No doubt.
And what came out, and you can see it in some of our background materials on the original consideration, is that the public is that third perspective. Rated each one of the 17s as extremely important, and varying degrees, but clearly it was the top vote getter on each of those 17 conditions. So the third perspective is really the public, and that's what we're trying to do, is make sure that the public feels safe as dining establishments. You can open the doors all you want. If the public doesn't feel safe coming in, they're not going to come in. So you've taken care of the supply side of the economic equation. What we're trying to do is make sure that there's a demand there, because the demand feels safe in those establishments.
Ramon Valadez, we got about a minute and a half. I want to cover one kind of related topic, but it's separate but important. And I've got a minute 30 before a hard break, so I'll get through the question really quick. We haven't seen people getting tested in Pima County during the blitzes. What do we do about it?
We've actually seen a considerably greater testing. Obviously, particularly when Banner Healthcare South opened up to that testing, we haven't seen statewide the amount of testing that the governor had wanted to do, but there simply aren't the test kits to be able to do that. The truth is that when you look at PPEs, we're in short supply. We see here news reports of airplanes landing in other states. They're not landing in Arizona. When we look at the amount of test kits we have, we don't have enough test kits to actually do the blitz that the governor talked about. We have pending orders everywhere we can have them. There simply isn't that testing capability yet. It is growing and it is better, but it's not where it needs to be.
Ramon Valadez, let's end there before we both get cut off. Once again, thank you for your willingness to come on and chat with us. Again, there is a hearing later today at 2 o'clock, you said, correct?
Correct, at 1:30 West Congress.
And online as well?
Correct.
Perfect. Until either next week or the week after, Ramon, be safe, stay healthy, and thank you again for walking us through this today. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. You and your listeners, any day.
Thanks, Ramon.
Okay.
Yes, sir. We'll be right back after bottom of the hour news with Fernando Gonzalez, Republican, running for Richard Elias's seat in District 5. We'll be right back.
How would you like a hand in shaping the future of transportation in Tucson? Well, the city's developing a plan called Move Tucson to identify and prioritize transportation projects over the next 20 years, and we want to hear from you. Head to movetucson.org to share your vision for how to improve Tucson transportation, no matter how you get around. How do you want Tucson to grow? Go to movetucson.org and let us know. Again, that's movetucson.org.
Over the last couple of weeks, there have been a variety of both state and federal emergency funds set up to help individuals and businesses survive COVID-19. To make sure you have the best opportunity to access these resources and apply for business loans and more, you're encouraged to get your taxes in and to do it with the help of a tax professional. Give Shanae and her team at Simply Bookkeeping and Taxes a call at 520-838-0856 to get started. Tell her you heard it on Tipping Point for 50% off.
WhyLoveWhereILive.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to whyloveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going. Good morning, Tucson. Welcome back to Tipping Point here on 1030 The Voice, daily in-depth news, talk, and conversation about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I am your host, Zach Yenser, and I'm joined on the air now by Fernando Gonzalez. He is a Republican running for Richard Elias's Board of Supervisors seat here in Pima County in District 5, held temporarily by Betty Villegas, it is an open seat. Betty will not be running for that herself. And here we are with Fernando Gonzalez on the air. Fernando, thanks for coming on with us for a few minutes today. How are you?
Well, thank you very much for having me on the program. I'm really excited to be able to talk with the public there.
Yes, for sure. So this has become my starter question, and it makes sense because it's the name of my show, but I enjoy asking it every single time, Fernando. What was your tipping point moment? What was that moment you got out of bed and said, I'm the guy for the job. I need to get in this race. I think I can do it well. What was your tipping point moment?
I think, you know, when I ran in 2008, I saw there was some pretty sad issues regarding when it comes to poverty in Pima County, the roads, obviously, the mismanagement of the budget, the debt that the county had incurred. And so here we are, you know, 8 years later, and nothing has really changed. And I think people have been talking to me about running in the past and again. And so this time I decided, you know what, I'm retired. I had my own business. I'm retired. And I have a lot of time to focus on the job.
Right. And you are running unopposed as a Republican in District 5, correct? You're the only R on the ballot?
Yes, sir, I am.
Got it. When you know, I think it's interesting. This has become the add-on question, Fernando, for candidates that I didn't ask before because it wasn't here before. But COVID-19, I think, has changed the game on a lot of things moving forward. What do you think the region needs from our electeds in the next year and a half, to pull ourselves out of some of the negative impacts of COVID-19? And how is that impact some of your platform and what you want to do in the seat?
That's actually a very good question. You know, the Pima County has always been run as a nonprofit organization. So consequently, they have no incentive to be productive, to be transparent with the taxpayers. And so a lot of the people that were on the board have always been politicians or people who are have been in politics for a long time, and my idea is to come at it from a business perspective. In business, you have to have a balanced budget or you won't survive. You have to prioritize or you won't survive. You know, I had a big contract, almost $1 million contract that I lost through the bidding process, and I had it for about 8 years, and I lost it. And so what I had to do is I had to prioritize. I just wasn't spending the same amount of money. Even I cut my salary by 60% in order to survive in business. And so it's important to know that we need to prioritize in Pima County, and that's not what's happening right now. So unfortunately, it's gotten us into a lot of trouble because the majority of the board thinks that the taxpayers have deep pockets, and it's a lot easier to spend other people's money than it is your own. And so I think just looking at it from a business perspective, what is it that we need to do? And it's just not one. I don't want to be a lone ranger on the Pima County Board of Supervisors. I want it to be a team effort to work together with others for the benefit and the good of the county.
Some of the issues you mentioned, Fernando, on your website that we'll get into momentarily are focuses on poverty, infrastructure, taxes, public safety, the budget. Tell us a little bit in way of introduction for those listening who maybe haven't heard of you or haven't worked with you before. Tell us a little bit about Fernando Gonzalez and why you think your experience is going to be helpful to you in this seat.
Yeah, you know, I've worked actually for county government, state government, nonprofits, private industry. So I know the workings of the nonprofit sector as well as the private sector. And so I've owned my own business for the past 20 years. In that particular business, obviously, budget was a very important part. You know, I budgeted so that I never had to borrow any money to help with the I've never had to borrow any money because of my budgeting practices. If I was to grow or if I was to get a new contract, I always had the money to be able to do that. That experience, you know, owning my business for 20 years, knowing what it means to really prioritize what's important, what are the needs really, and not what are the wants. And that's what needs to happen in Pima County.
Yeah, Fernando, it seems I was looking over your website the other day and this morning as well, and just in preparation for our conversation. And one of the themes that I've seen on your social media, seeing on your website, something you message a lot about is your frustration that we continue to rank among one of the more poorer metros of our size in the country, and that you believe that the county and the city have, in your words, choked off jobs, and the way that we've done that has created poverty. Can you maybe as our last conversation piece before the break, and I want to get into some of your other issues as well, can you explain to us why that is such a big theme for your campaign?
It is, because, you know, when people don't have jobs, that equals poverty. And it saddens me because when I ran 8 years ago and I walked the neighborhood, and I chose the Democrat strongholds to be able to walk. And I did. And all the people that I met were struggling. They were either unemployed or they were living in horrible conditions. And really, honestly, that broke my heart, man. I felt like, oh my God, how could this be happening? How could one in four children in Pima County live in poverty like that? You know, and it hit me hard. And consequently, you know, I actually had a radio program, which I didn't mention on there, but I had a radio program for about 5 years, a few years ago, and talking about all the issues that affect our county, both physically, spiritually, et cetera. So, it was pretty hard. And then to read, you know, that Tucson is ranked as one of the worst cities to live in the Southwest. I mean, what kind of reputation are we building here? And it goes all back down to the leadership.
You know, Fernando, I want to break my rules here and go on a quick break a little bit early, because I want to dive into what your solutions are. How do we crack that nut? Because I think we've been, in my mind, struggling with some of the same issues for a really long time. You mentioned this was inspiration for you 8 years ago, but you and I know that this, I mean, has been happening for decades in our region. We just can't seem to crack this nut and overcome some of these same issues to get to our best possible future. I want to go to break a little bit early. When we come back, I want to talk about some of your issues and platforms and strategies, Fernando, for overcoming that should you step into that seat in the fall. We'll go do that right now. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. Tucson, don't go away, here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Friday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
Over the last couple of weeks, there have been a variety of both state and federal emergency funds set up to help individuals and businesses survive COVID-19. To make sure you have the best opportunity to access these resources and apply for business loans and more, you're encouraged to get your taxes in and to do it with the help of a tax professional. Give Shanae and her team at Simply Bookkeeping and Taxes a call at 520-838-0856 to get started. Tell her you heard it on Tipping Point for 50% off.
25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Vantage West Credit Union proudly stands with the communities we serve during these unprecedented and trying times. It's in these moments where strong communities thrive by working together. We are proud to live in a place where we help each other, even in the midst of the most difficult of circumstances. We will emerge more connected and more prosperous than ever before. Vantage West has been here since 1955. We're here now, and we will get through this together. Vantage West Credit Union, federally insured by NCUA.
This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion. And your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. The Buckmaster Show, weekdays live during the noon hour on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. Always on BuckmasterShow.com.
Tucson, welcome back for part two of our conversation with Fernando Gonzalez. He's a Republican running for Democrat Richard Elias' seat in District 5 on the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Fernando, I wanted to stop where we did so we could take as much time as we possibly can here before the top of the hour to dive into some of the themes that I know you've thought about already of you're in the seat tomorrow. What do you do? What do you advocate for? And I want to start with jobs and economic development, which you state is something that's important to you to see. What would you do differently that as you look at the current set of board members, both R's and D's, that you would do differently than what is being done now to be a more attractive location for jobs and business?
Yes, well, economic development actually is one of the responsibilities of the Board of Supervisors, and they actually have it in their web, you know, and the mission there is to help and nurture existing businesses and new businesses, you know, and so a healthy community is brought about by economic stability. So jobs and development of business is important. And I think what's happening, you know, unfortunately, Pima County has a reputation of being anti-business. So my plan is to really work with some of the entities, other jurisdictions for best practices, to work with Pima County Small Business Commission and other entities to be able to streamline some of the services that we provide, the permitting process, make it a lot easier for businesses to start, grow, and thrive in our community. So that's really important. The unfortunate part is that there's too much politics involved in this area. Pima County for many years has picked and chose the winners and the losers. I'll give you a good example. They, both the city of Tucson and Pima County came up with a resolution that they weren't going to invest or hire any company that was involved in building, any construction company that was involved in building the wall on the southern border. That is not our job. Our job is to stimulate many of those people. That's their job. They're trying to feed their families. And so we need to really honestly take politics out of the economic development and out of the jobs and quit picking winners and losers. And also not not advocating for pet projects. There's a lot of pet projects in Pima County, and I think that's got to stop. So just go ahead and put the economic development plan into practice, and not just have it written. Sounds good, looks good, it's a good read, but not follow it.
Fernando, I'd be curious to get your thoughts, and you write about it a little bit on your website. I think the worldview deal is something that is an interesting example of this, because where I'm challenged is you certainly don't want cronyism, or you don't want, you know, any special deals being made. But innovation in this country has often started by the public sector and research dollars de-risking the market a little bit until the private sector is able to step in. To me, without all the details involved, Worldview is an example of that, where it's an innovation economy actor. It can often be assisted in economic development by the public sector de-risking it until the private sector can fully fund it. We see that examples over and over and over again. Is that to you picking winners and losers, or is there a role for Pima County to provide some incentives and some initial funding up front to get some things going that otherwise either wouldn't or wouldn't for a while?
Well, you know, it's not Pima County's job to fund a public, a private entity as they have. The bad part about it is that the financing plan for this particular facility, you know, they use certificates of participation, which is a debt issuance that doesn't require voter approval. So they kind of went around, in a sense, to borrow, and so the county then borrows against an asset to fund this project. What is this project about, and how many jobs is it bringing? That's the other question. You know, they're laying off people right now. What they're doing is providing a rocket to fly up to the atmosphere at a cost. If you want to do that, $75,000 it'll take for you to take that ride. Who in Pima County and the represented and the taxpayers that we represent is able to afford that when they're living day to day, just trying to make ends meet? And so when the county does shenanigans like this, and then they just voted to cancel the rent and utilities, I believe, to several companies who are already getting assistance from the government, when they go ahead and cancel the rent, you know, what this company, how is it serving the public? It's not serving really the public when you think about it. And right after that, they're laying off people. So it makes no sense. We should not. You talk about corporate welfare. This is corporate welfare right here at its finest. And so that's why the county is using our taxpayers' money to fund companies, private companies they have no business doing.
I want to switch over with you, Fernando, now to make sure we get to this, because you get into this in good detail as well on your platform. That's infrastructure. You state that Pima County receives $95.5 million from VLT and HERF monies that are designated for roads, and that your concern is that the upcoming Pima County budget is designating $26 million for roads, down from $36 million designated last fiscal year. You know, certainly, and this is another concern of mine, how do we get past this? You know, certainly we know that a lot of that money, it's not one-to-one. It's not like we get that money and it goes directly to pavement. The debt, servicing the debt that we've been carrying since the 90s, is a piece of that, and we got to get rid of it. I mean, and we don't want to make the same mistake, but we got to get rid of what we have. Tell me about HERF dollars, swept HERF dollars, infrastructure dollars. What would you do better than the current representation on the board?
Again, I would designate more funds, you know, to road. 60% of the roads can't even, by Chuck Huckleberry's own words, can't even be repaired. They need to be rebuilt, and so our taxpayers are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars having to fix their cars because they hit these road bumps in the road, you might say, or in this case, holes in the road. And so what I would do is I would designate more money to fix the roads. And one of the things that I would do is I would start by asking the transportation department to tell us, and they have this information, which are the worst roads in the county. Which are the worst roads in the county? And I don't care what district they're in, let's attack those first. Let's go ahead and start rebuilding those roads again. So that's one of the things that I would definitely start with, is just prioritizing which roads are the worst in the county and then address more money in those areas to go ahead and fix the roads.
Fernando, we have about 3.5 minutes. I want to talk to you about taxes because I know that's a big one. Pima County has the highest property tax in Arizona, but once you add in secondary taxes and other kinds of taxes, it all combined is actually puts us, I think, either in the top third or in the half around the state. Everyone talks about the property tax side, but the whole picture is actually a little bit sunnier. You still have concerns about the property tax rate in Arizona or in Pima County. What would you do? Would you keep taxes? Would you lower them? Would you increase them to take care of some of these roads? What would you do on taxes?
Well, you know, taxes are necessary in order to be able to fund any government. They are necessary. I'm not against taxes at all. What I am against is the misappropriation of our tax dollars. You know, just a little bit going to the roads, you know, they had this proposition 463 to fix the roads. It sounded good. They used $260,000 of our taxpayer dollars to promote Prop 463. I was on the opposite end. We only had $10,000 to promote the no on 463, and we won. The reason we won is not because we're marketing geniuses. The reason we won is because people are realizing that there's not a problem with paying taxes. It's the misappropriation of our taxes. That's the problem. And so, that's what I was talking in the beginning, you know, when it comes to the budget, is what are the priorities in the county? How are we ensuring that we get the best buck for our money? Why are we paying $600,000 more for a bowling alley than we should? Why are we buying properties and taking them off the tax roll? Why did we buy Buckaloo Farms, the pumpkin patch? You know, all those questions are you know, why? And it's important to understand because these people don't have a business perspective. They don't come from a business background. And so it's always been known as a nonprofit organization, and we need to change that.
VoteFernandoGonzalez.org is your website. We're coming down to the final seconds of the hour. That feels like a good place to stop. For volunteering, for donating, for finding more out about you, Fernando, that website's the best place?
Yes, sir. That's it.
Super. Fernando, thank you so much for your time this morning, for coming on to share your vision for the region and your platform and issues. And we'll have you on again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it, Zach.
You got it. Yes, Tucson, that's a continuation of our Your Vote, Your Voice, our election 2020 coverage locally all the way up to nationally. That's it for us today. We'll be back on Friday, same time, same place. Hugh Hewitt, Bill Buckmaster coming up. See you, Tucson.